welcome to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast for two siblings who love books.
We love books so much that this week we read three short stories
that were published in a newspaper, which is a dead medium. Speaking of dead things, Speaking of dead things, we read The Final Problem.
Spoiler alert!
The Speckled Band, yeah, spoiler alert on thing written 120 years ago. And a Scandal in Bohemia, which I believe in 2015 would be Gossip Magazine news, but would not actually be considered scandalous by anybody.
Oh, the Scandal of Bohemia. Yeah.
Oh, the Prince of Bohemia has been sleeping with attractive ladies. Well, yeah, he's royalty. Okay. Why wouldn't he if he had the opportunity?
Yeah, exactly. Isn't that basically what Harry is doing all the time?
I believe that
I, like, don't keep track of the royals at all, but right. That's my understanding, at least.
I'm pretty sure filling the pages of gossip magazines is actually the ceremonial function that the limited monarchy is supposed to perform these days.
Keep the people distracted.
That's right.
We read the Sherlock Holmes stories this week because, first of all, because everyone loves the Sherlock Holmes stories, so we figured that people would be interested in hearing about them. But also because I'm in grad school and reading three short stories is a lot easier for me than reading an entire book. I have a ton to do this semester, and I am shocked that I'm even able to record one podcast, so.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I was going to add one thing that nobody is saying listening to this episode is, wait, who's Sherlock Holmes?
Very true. We figured we did not have to give anyone an in-depth plot about anything, because even if you haven't read these particular stories, you probably are at least familiar with the general structure of a Sherlock Holmes story. Hopefully. So, cook up a nice little plot synopsis for everybody.
All right. Sherlock Holmes is smarter than you.
Unless you're Irene Adler, I guess.
Or Professor Moriarty. Actually, in two of the three stories you read, Sherlock Holmes was not necessarily head and shoulders smarter than everybody else in the stories.
This is a terrible plot synopsis!
All right, new plot synopsis. Sherlock Holmes is a dick, and so am I.
So true on so many counts. I was actually struck reading these stories. I had never really read a lot of Sherlock Holmes before. I don't know that I've actually read any Sherlock Holmes before. I'm just kind of familiar with the general pop culture version of him. And I was surprised that he was such a dick in these stories. I kind of loved it.
Yeah, he's kind of an aloof weirdo. He likes his drugs. He likes to experiment with random things that we're probably supposed to believe are scientific, but probably are just weird things. I suspect he's one of those guys who actually smart, but really when no one's looking, just likes to blow shit up.
So true. I was surprised about, like, the drug thing at the beginning of Scandal Bohemia, and Watson just said, oh yeah, well, you know, like, he was probably up on one of his little cocaine benders, and I went and found him, and he decided to lay off for a little while, and I was like, this is a Victorian short story? Like, your admirable protagonist is just doing coke because nothing interesting is happening? That was so nuts to me.
I know, especially since some adaptations won't go any farther than having him have a certain affectation for a pipe.
Yeah, the whole pipe thing. But what you don't know is that he's actually smoking crack with his pipe. And not tobacco.
Sherlock Holmes, crack fiend.
not too far from the truth. So, I mean, clearly these are all detective stories. Sherlock Holmes is a detective. They're set in London, England. And just in case people are confused, because all of the adaptations currently on TV are in modern day, they were written in the 1890s. So Victorian England, contemporary with when the author was writing them. And one of the kind of other interesting features about the Holmes stories, which I think just about everyone does know, is that they're told from Watson's point of view. So he's kind of writing them after the fact. And I think he's indicating that he is selling them for people to read as well. But it finally answered Ben's question of if it's possible to have a narrator who is not the protagonist.
Yeah, because Holmes is definitely the person of interest in these stories. Watson's just kind of the agreeable friend who is along for the ride. Hey, Watson, you up for risking death this afternoon? Eh, why not? I'll cancel my appointments.
Yes, quite. There was a great exchange where, in Scandal in Bohemia, where Holmes says, are you willing to do something illegal? And Watson says, oh, yes, like, the occasion calls for it. And then Holmes says, you may be putting yourself at great risk. And then he says something else that's very, you know, oh, I don't mind. And it just, like, cracked me up that Watson was just so willing to be like, yeah, let's do it. Let's break the law.
See, Watson's just a bro, Victorian gentleman style.
Totally, he is. He and Sherlock are just best bros.
That's right. You up for some nonsense, some total nonsense tonight? Yeah, man, let's do it. Yes, quite.
He's like, all right, you gotta throw a firecracker into this lady's house exactly this time and then run away. And he's like, done.
And while she's distracted, I'll raid her panty drawer.
So the Victorian era pranks. That should be a thing. That's my fan fiction request, is just write stories where Holmes and Watson run around pranking people.
Like back in their college days or something. Oh, we always end up on a college comedy sooner or later, but it kind of works with this.
I think it totally does. Yeah, and like they lived like they're roommates, you know, they live together, and Watson's always trying to bring girlfriends home, and then Holmes is weirding them out, and they all leave, and they're like, what the hell is wrong with this guy? Totally works.
That's right.
Okay, so aside from Holmes kind of being a dick and being a total weirdo, is there anything else you want to say about him?
So definitely what we're supposed to take away from him, because I actually don't think dick and total weirdo is necessarily what Arthur Conan Doyle had in mind. I mean, maybe a little bit, but he is supposed to come across as super observant more than anything else. And I don't know, there was a scene where he was talking to Watson about, yes, you've seen, but have you actually truly observed? And
yeah, how many steps are there from downstairs to the second floor?
Right.
Was his example, and I thought, yeah, I never know how many steps I'm going up, and it reminded me of Scott, who compulsively counts stairs. Oh. And so if he was hanging out with Sherlock Holmes and Holmes asked him that, he'd be like, 15, bitch.
I'd be like, too many, I'm winded.
You gotta start doing more cocaine then, lose some weight.
That's right.
And the thing about Holmes is he almost has, like, I don't know, supernatural, maybe that's not the right word, godlike powers of observation. Like, he's seen the most ridiculous tiny little things he could possibly notice.
Yeah, we're really just supposed to believe that he's so perceptive that he actually catches all of this stuff. And he's just supposed to be that much more impressive a specimen of a thinker than the rest of us.
And he's always trying to train Watson into being a better observer, but Watson kind of acts as the, in the place of the audience.
Yeah.
He never quite gets it, because he's like, dude, what's going on?
I think there are a couple of stories, not any of the ones we read, where Holmes kind of gives Watson the chance to deduce something. Like, hey, we've seen this, so what could that mean, Watson? And Watson will be able to figure, once he has all the data, Watson can figure it out. So maybe on some level we're supposed to think that Holmes is super perceptive, and if the rest of us were equally perceptive, we could be just as great a detective as Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, and I do like that aspect. I think even though, even in the stories we read where Holmes was out observing Watson, he's never like, Watson, you're an idiot, you don't know shit. Like, he really appreciates him and respects him as a friend, so clearly Watson is bringing something to the table for him.
Yeah, he's a doctor, a profession generally respected as being filled with intelligent men, even when medicine was not as advanced as it is now.
When medicine was about cutting people open who were sick and making their so we got this going on. Watson and Holmes are really the two most fleshed out characters, which is kind of funny considering the discussion of Watson is like, he's a doctor, he's pretty smart, he likes Holmes, that's about what he's got. He's married, in some of the stories, at least. That's about what we got for Watson. He's a game for pranks.
Yeah. We know he's very loyal, I guess.
Yeah.
That might be his defining characteristic as much as anything. But, I mean, there aren't really any other characters that recur regularly unless it's, you know, like Mrs. Hudson, the housekeeper, whose name gets mentioned, I think, every once in a while, but who certainly doesn't have dialogue or anything.
Well, of course not. You can't let women speak. The same thing with Watson's wife is he mentions he has a wife fairly often, but she never seems to actually be there or anyone. So we don't really get anything of her. Holmes's brother Mycroft shows up in a couple of the stories, so I guess he's a recurring character. But actually, two of the stories we read were read for the purpose of containing two of the most infamous characters in the Holmes canon, so we thought we'd talk about them, even though there's, like, not a ton to say.
Yeah, so every adaptation, just about, that's ever been done of Sherlock Holmes has some version of the Irene Adler character, a woman, the woman, as Holmes refers to her.
The woman.
Yes. Who can match wits with Sherlock Holmes. And she only appears in the one story, as it turns out. And her outwitting him basically consists of figuring out that he was in the middle of some crazy plan to figure her out and being just a step ahead of him, I guess.
Yeah, and that one was kind of interesting because she outwitted him. Like, he didn't, you know, get the photo like it was his goal. But because she got married and ran away, it all came to the same thing. Like, the client was happy because she wasn't going to release the scandal, so.
Right, yeah, and she, what was I just about to say? God damn it, I completely lost the thread. It was a good point, too. Well, now it's too late.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah, it was probably stupid.
So, I kind of like that aspect, because most of the time, Holmes outwitted everybody. So here's one case where, like, someone finally got, you know, the upper hand on him. So I can see why she's an attractive character for adaptations, because you can bring in someone who actually occasionally catches Holmes, like, off guard. But because Hollywood is Hollywood, and other things like that. She seems to more often be used as a romantic interest.
Right.
As opposed to, like, you know, Master of Wits or whatever. Like, she sometimes has that aspect too, but there's usually some kind of at least, like, past romantic thing going on.
Right, yeah. They should have, like, a Batman-Catwoman thing going on, probably. I was going to say, I remember what I was going to say a minute ago. Holmes, she really gets a step ahead of him in part because he underestimates her.
And
in part because she's a woman and you know how predictable the women's are.
Yeah, that isn't that something like he says toward the end of the story where like, oh, I never imagined women could, like, be so, like, use their reason in such a way, but clearly I underestimated her.
Yes.
Like, most women are fucking stupid. So I didn't expect this one to do anything interesting.
When put in danger, a woman will immediately look at her most valuable possession.
Yeah, either her baby if she's married, or her jewelry if she's unmarried. I'm like, dude, fuck you!
Hey man, I'd be running out of my apartment in my underwear holding a couple of trombones, so I don't think it only applies to women. Erica's still in bed.
I mean, I agree, but for the thing that's the most important. Most important to you, but it's not going to stick in your baby or jewelry.
My baby or my jewels. My daughter or my ducats.
Totally. So one thing I think I thought was interesting is like one of the things a lot of adaptations do with Irene Adler is because you know she gets married in that story and ends up running away with this husband that she like claims to love, but because she's so sneaky, it's possible that she doesn't love him and she's just working a new angle for some reason, which is like a fun way to approach that. But I also think it would be kind of interesting if she showed up in some adaptation where she actually was married to that dude because she actually did love him. But then she, like, still fucked around with Holmes. You know, she's like, well, I'm happily married. Like, I'm not interested in you. That was not, like, a ploy. I actually wanted to marry this guy. But I'm also doing all this other tricky stuff on the side.
Yeah, maybe she's like a spy and he's an international businessman that she met on a mission or something.
Yeah,
could make her into a total badass.
Uh-oh.
Hey, Gab's like the last 60 seconds of you talking has just been gibberish.
Oh, fucking shit. Okay. So I guess what's the last thing I said that was actually intelligible?
That's a good question. I think you were trying to ask why couldn't she be some way or another.
Married. Yeah. Well, I mean, basically, just the point I wanted to make was I think that in a new adaptation, Irene Adler should be happily married to this guy, and then they could be, like, some fun, interesting, like, married couple going around committing shenanigans, because I think it'd be fun to have an actual interesting married couple instead of a boring one. So.
Right. A thing that mostly doesn't exist in fiction.
Exactly, yeah. Either they're happy and boring, or they hate each other, and then you're just like, okay.
Yeah,
so
why do you exist?
Exactly. Okay, anything else on Irene Adler?
No.
Alright, then moving on to Moriarty. Professor Moriarty.
Professor Moriarty. So,
even though he's not a professor...
Well, he was until recently a professor.
And now he's in the army or something?
But he's an army coach? I don't even know what that means. Like, is he teaching artillerymen math or something like that?
Yeah, I did not understand that. I was like, what? They kicked him out of teaching, so they put him in charge of guns? Like, that doesn't seem like a safe choice.
You seem like the criminal sort. Have a big gun. Oh, well, thank you. Well, so Moriarty is almost like a Hollywood villain in some ways, because we're given his smart credentials, but never actually shown an example of him being smart.
Yeah.
And then we're told he does villainous things and has a villainous organization, but we're never actually shown any of that.
And I'm pretty sure Holmes never actually says any of the crimes that they committed. He just is like, this guy is a criminal mastermind, and he's committed many crimes. And then he's just like, okay, I'm done. But what did he do?
Such a wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Yeah. He's the Napoleon of crime.
Space Moriarty is what made Mos Eisley Cantina into such a wretched hive of scum and villainy.
What?
I'm making Star Wars references since you asked me for quotes the other day.
Jesus Christ.
Teehee.
Okay. So, I think the other thing that's kind of odd about him is that the first story he ever appeared in is The Final Problem, which is the story where Holmes dies. And it seems like Conan Doyle basically came up with him in order to kill Holmes off, because by that point he was sick of writing the stories. So he didn't seem to invest that much time or care into making his character good, because, I don't know, the entire time I read The Final Problem, I just got the impression that Conan Doyle was like, I'm bored, I want to finish writing these stupid stories. So he's just like throwing all the narrative possible at it to make the story move as quickly as possible.
Yeah, it seemed like it should have been novel length if it was going to show all the cool adventures that were obviously happening in the background the whole time.
Yeah, that was the craziest thing about that story, is they were, you know, hopping on trains, hopping off trains, going to the continent, like running around on cliffs and stuff, and just none of it was interesting.
Yeah.
And there's the showdown of these two brilliant men, and all we get is a conversation that Holmes narrates to us that has already happened, and that's all we get.
Like, yep. Okay.
So, I really liked the point, Ben, that you made about this beforehand, where if you had handed this in a creative writing class, your teacher would hand it back and say, show, don't tell.
Yep.
So there's not really much to say about Moriarty. He's a criminal mastermind, he's apparently a genius, he's super evil, and that's about all we got. And do we ever even figure out, like, what his master scheme is?
No, he has no motivation, he's just smart and evil.
Okay. So, yeah, that's your, you know, on the top 10 list of villains, and like, yeah, I don't really get it. It's kind of like the Irene Adler thing, I guess, where people saw an opportunity for fun adaptations because he is a toe-to-toe guy with Holmes, so it's more fun to give him more to bounce off of, I guess.
The story is almost like an outline of a character that would be fun to actually go to the trouble to write.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. You kind of get his background character sketch, but then haven't actually started to write him in earnest yet.
Right. Yeah, so again, in an adaptation, he'd be a character that where you'd have like 3 or 4 seasons of bad things being hinted at, and then he shows up in the 5th season as the adversary the entire season, and then your show is supposed to be over, but you got good ratings because of the awesome Moriarty season, and you limp along lamely for 2.5 more seasons before they pull the plug.
That was an eerily accurate description of American television. Good job, Ben.
Yeah, I'm no dummy.
So those are kind of the only characters really worth talking about. So I'm just going to push on ahead. I guess one thing that we didn't really talk about with Irene Adler that we can bring up now addition to her, you know, mainly being brought back as a romantic interest, which isn't great, is the fact that she only shows up in this one short story, and there are however many Sherlock Holmes stories. What does that tell us about the women in Sherlock Holmes stories?
It tells us that when they are present, they're not all that important. Maybe you can take, like, just a little bit of the edge off the criticism. I'm thinking of The Speckled Band, where Watson made some offhanded comment in his narration about, when a woman like this comes to someone, usually they're dismissed as hysterical, but Holmes actually listens to them.
Yeah.
But that's about as... that was, like, the whole depth of that woman's character, on the other hand.
I mean, she wasn't hysterical. She had totally irrational fears, but she, you know, her plot was basically evil stepfather's trying to murder her and she's getting married soon. And that's about what we know about her. So you can see why people haven't really bothered to play off of that character much.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I haven't read a lot of Sherlock Holmes, but I'm assuming most of the women in his other stories are just about as interesting, which is why everyone fixates on Irene Adler.
Right. Yeah, the women in those short stories, because I've read a handful of other ones, are generally someone who needs help.
Yeah.
And then they're really more of a... They're not even really a proper damsel in distress as much as they are just a plot device.
I was gonna say more just like a prop on which like the starting, oh my god, I'm having trouble talking right now.
The Prince of Bohemia.
the starting point for Holmes to like start going on his adventures, basically.
Right,
so,
yeah. Like what yeah. What thing, if it was a Star Trek episode, what random creature you encounter in space will set off the action this week?
Yeah, exactly. So
is Sherlock Holmes actually a detective / monster of the week story?
You know? Yeah, maybe a little bit. Especially considering some of the people are, like, the stepfather in The Speckled Band, who kind of is this monster. You could even say some of these mysteries he's solving, the antagonists are monsters, so...
Yeah, I guess that is, that's fair.
Yeah. Okay, so in addition to that, there was one other point we thought we should bring up.
Yeah, let's get to the fun stuff.
Because modern views of these stories, the fandom surrounding, like, wanting Sherlock Holmes and Watson to be a couple is such a thing. We have to talk about homoeroticism. Which is totally cool with me, because I personally, like, could totally ship Holmes and Watson. I'm fine with that.
I was telling Gabs before we started recording that, so we're going to talk about the role of women in these stories and homoeroticism. Isn't that basically like the alternate title of our podcast?
All we talk about. It's our favorite thing. Yeah, so in these particular stories, you know, if you wanted to, it's two guys living together. Watson and Holmes are basically running around, going on all these adventures. Watson's willing to drop what he needs to help his buddy out. In The Final Problem in particular, they go on this, like, two-week vacation together in the continent. So you could kind of read it that way. I'm sure that Conan Doyle did not intend it that way, because Victorians were like that. But I think it's, like, if you want to interpret that way, I'm cool with it. Especially the line where Holmes comes running into his room and says, "I'm sorry to knock you up, my dear Watson." And there's just like, oh man, it's just like begging for male pregnancy fan fiction. Like,
it's a junior Sherlock Holmes crossover.
Oh, God. Junior as in Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, yes.
Junior. Yes, okay. And... Oh, God, that's so weird. Also, the fact that, you know, Watson has a wife, but, like, barely ever talks about her and we never see her, I think that makes it even more... It's easier to even push her out of the way. It's like, well, he's married, but he never talks about her, so clearly he doesn't care about her that much.
Yeah, maybe it's one of those Victorian marriages where he's covering up his real tastes and lifestyle.
Exactly. And then Holmes comes across as asexual because, you know, clearly he can never actually admit to being attracted to men, so they're both hiding it, and I don't know. You go crazy.
I was just saying, how many, even in Victorian times, how many men could, at the drop of a hat, leave their wife for weeks on end to basically go on a honeymoon in Europe with a dude?
Yeah. Essentially. I just, like, I get the feeling that, that Mary, or, I don't, does he say his wife's name is Mary, or am I just... thinking that because of the movies.
I was thinking, I think he did mention her name, and I don't think it was Mary, but I don't remember what it was.
Okay. So, I just like to imagine her, like, coming home and having a letter from Watson, you know, saying, oh, sorry, my dear, I had to run off. Holmes had something to attend to. We're going to be vacationing on the continent for 2 weeks. And she just kind of rolls her eyes, and it's like, yeah, okay, whatever. It's like, goes about her business. Used to that.
Yeah. She's happier when he's not home anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing against him. They don't have, like, a tempestuous relationship. She just likes to do her own thing.
Well, I mean, if it's one of those Victorian marriages, then, you know, yeah, they get along fine, but they're not madly in love or anything, so who cares?
Yeah, she's off dropping calling cards at other people's houses or something.
Or maybe she's secretly going on adventures of her own.
With
maybe
Irene Adler.
Yes, exactly. Someone needs to write a series of short stories about Irene Adler and...
and Watson's wife.
Watson's wife going on adventures together.
And how they take down Mrs. Moriarty.
Or like Moriarty's sister, maybe. Oh, so we don't have like another wife. That'd be perfect. That needs to happen. So that actually kind of segues nicely into something I wanted to talk about, because Ben and I have both seen the Guy Ritchie adaptations of Sherlock Holmes starring Robert Downey Jr. and Jude Law, where Watson's wife Mary in those movies kind of does just take the tack of, like, Holmes and Watson are running around together, and she's like, all right, you boys go have fun. Just right. Kind of accepts it.
Right.
But I think another thing that the Guy Ritchie movies do that the fangirls, I'm sure, appreciate is kind of put in those moments of homoeroticism between Holmes and Watson. Like, Watson getting married is a huge deal for Holmes, and he's trying to get over it, but having a very difficult time. And
yes.
They often squabble like a married couple, and particularly if you've seen the second movie, they had like dance together at a ball. So the director's definitely throwing a lot of bones there.
Yeah.
And I totally think in those movies, if those two characters actually kissed, it would not even be out of character for them.
If there's a third movie, maybe he'll find a way to cram it in there on some pretext.
Yeah, I feel like it would totally just go with the flow. It would not ruin anything. Just, it would totally make sense.
I wonder, I wonder if Conan Doyle had Watson get married kind of off camera and one of these stories, because even back in the 1890s, people were making comments.
Yeah, they were like Victorian era fangirls.
Like early shippers, yeah.
Or just people saying, like, two men living together, that's very odd. And then he's like, oh, shit.
He's like, no, no, there's nothing inappropriate happening here. And maybe secretly there actually was in his mind, but...
They go strolling through alpine villages together.
It's pretty romantic.
It's pretty romantic. And the other thing I just wanted to say really quick about the Robert Downey Jr. versions of the movies is that, I mean, clearly they are pretty ridiculous and over the top, and there is way more, like, crazy action going on than ever happens in the short stories. Like, that, yes, okay. But I actually think that the characters of Holmes and Watson are pretty loyal to the stories, because Holmes in those movies is kind of a dick and sometimes goes off on drug benders and is like a really weird, quirky dude who isn't great at knowing how to get along with people, but respects and really likes Watson, who is, you know, a respectable guy. I think all of those things come through in those movies. So I think people who are up in arms about them, I mean, like, maybe they're up in arms about the ridiculous over-the-top action sequences, but I actually think the characters are pretty good.
Yeah, they seem like updated to be a little quicker and more interesting for the screen, obviously, but they do seem like pretty honest representations of what the original characters were. Because Holmes, I mean, he really is just kind of a weirdo.
Yeah, he totally is.
And it's all very understated because of the time period and the place and the style of the time.
You know, yeah, the writing style in particular, I think, of that time, even when exciting things are happening, it just comes across as not that exciting because the writing style is so, like, you know, tied up and very British and, you know, Victorian, so.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, that seems like a reasonable point to segue to other things about the writing.
Yeah.
And we've talked about some of this stuff. So the final problem had the biggest issues that we've already mentioned. It's just a lot of narration and not much in the way of showing you what's actually going on with what really should be a much more interesting story.
It is by far the most boring of the three stories that we read.
Yes. The Speckled Band is kind of interesting, but we haven't really talked about it much because we didn't have an Irene Adler or a Professor Moriarty to focus on, perhaps. But it's kind of just a little episodic story that makes sense as something that was serialized in a newspaper. And, you know, just set up an adventure and knock it down real quick, basically. And
yeah.
There's, you know, kind of, I guess, what I, to some degree at least, associate with 19th century stuff that I've read is, tends to be a little heavier on the talking.
Yeah, a lot of talking, a lot of the action is not happening on the page. People show up and say, this thing happened to me, and Holmes says, you know, tell me every detail, and they tell this long story about everything that happened, so you get all the details, but, you know, it's through someone explaining it as opposed to actually seeing it.
Right. And, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing, I suppose. It definitely doesn't read like a more modern story, though.
No, but I still think, like, even though they are heavy on the talk and low on the action, at least for A Scandal in Bohemia and The Speckled Band, I thought the pace was pretty good, and I had a fun time reading them, and both of them were pretty short, so when they were done, I was like, oh, that was a fun read.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good summary of how I felt about those two stories as well.
Yeah. So they, and in reading them, I could see why people liked the stories, because they are pretty short, so they don't take, like, a huge time investment, and like we said, Holmes is pretty interesting, and his banter is pretty good. And the, like, mysteries themselves, I mean, I think the whole point is that there's some mystery going on, and then through the careful power of observation, Holmes figures out what's actually going on. So you kind of read to the end to get this reveal from Holmes of what actually was happening and all the little tiny things he noticed that led him to realize what was happening.
Yeah, and I think that because of the things that are interesting about these stories, and because even in some of the spots where, you know, in The Final Problem, which was not necessarily an intrinsically interesting story, it still, like, was hinting that there should be things that were interesting going on. You know, if I live another 200 years, it seems like the odds are pretty good that I'll continually see Holmes adaptations through that whole period.
Yeah, they're definitely not going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah.
People are still kind of endlessly fascinated with Sherlock Holmes.
Indeed.
Indeed, quite.
I guess we have more or less covered what we usually cover. I do feel compelled to mention that the Speckled Band had a menagerie of exotic pets, including a baboon and a cheetah. And the baboon shows up as like if it was a movie, as like a quick scare, right?
Yeah.
And the cheetah, I think, was just supposed to be like the threat of a cheetah jumping on your back while you were staking this place out or something.
Yeah, I think they heard it, like, make a meow or something at some point, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, there's a baboon and a cheetah, so it's more plausible this guy would have a snake so poisonous it doesn't actually exist.
Yes. That's a good point. Baboon and the cheetah are to build realism.
That's right. I liked the comparison of, I did like the comment of, well, cheetah's really just a giant cat, I guess.
Yeah, so it makes sense to leave a saucer of milk out for it.
No, but that saucer's too small. Holmes had to be...
It's like, okay, first of all, a cheetah is not just a giant, like, kind of a giant cat, but not really.
Just imagining feeding a cheetah, like, a jug of milk in it. The cheetah just getting mad and biting some meat off of you.
Yeah.
Give me that.
Curling up on your lap and purring. So I did think of one thing I wanted to ask you, Ben, is if you had to rank the three stories that we read, which one would you rank first? Like, which one would you be most likely to recommend that a listener read?
So... I'm pretty sure that The Adventure of the Speckled Band was in one of my high school literature textbooks. And I'm pretty sure I read it in high school, not for class, because I saw it in there and I was like, oh, Sherlock Holmes, let's see if this is good, because I'm a nerd.
Yeah, totally.
You know, as representative of the Sherlock Holmes canon, that might actually be the best example.
Right, because you don't have any of those special characters showing up.
Yeah. If you were someone who wanted to read some Holmes because you kind of knew who he was and wanted to write some sort of adaptation, I might suggest Scandal in Bohemia. So maybe you could do an awesome Irene Adler spinoff reboot or thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I would agree. I liked Scandal in Bohemia, but I agree that Speckled Band seemed more... like his other stuff, because it didn't have the special circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if you just want to get a flavor of a typical Holmes story, try The Speckled Band, which was a good read. But if you're really, really, really curious about Irene Adler, go ahead and read A Scandal in Bohemia. But, you know, she's not... You might be a little disappointed.
Yeah.
She's pretty cool, but she just can't really live up to, like, with what her adaptations have done, so...
Right, and it is, I mean, with any of them, they are pretty short. They're, none of them are more than a couple thousand words, I bet.
Yeah, yeah. But I think both of us would put The Final Problem at the bottom and suggest, don't read it.
Yes, disappointing. Check out an adapted version of that one, I guess, if you want to see it.
Yeah.
So, what you reading right now?
I am reading The Thorn Birds by Colleen McCullough. She actually died earlier this year. That's, I think, and apparently was an enormous, crazy bestseller at the time. And it's kind of this epic saga about this family in the early 1900s who lives in New Zealand and then ends up moving to Australia, and a bunch of stuff happens to them. So I haven't gotten very far. I'm not able to read it very often because I'm so busy. But so far, I think it's pretty cool. The author has a lot of really cool descriptions of kind of like what it's like to live in the outback in, you know, the 1900s. Hmm. And all the stuff people had to do in order to live there, which makes you go like, why the fuck did people ever live there?
Right.
So it's pretty interesting so far.
All right. I've just today finished The Real Life X-Files by Joe Nickell, noted skeptic investigator. Spoiler, all of the supernatural crap he investigates, not supernatural.
But Ben!
Yeah, it turns out that people think they see things they don't, or just make shit up pretty commonly and pretty provably with not much effort, actually.
Yeah.
Which is kind of disappointing. I'm not really a big believer in ghosts myself, but I think it would be awesome to meet one.
Yeah, that's what I always think, too. Like, the more I listen to people who go investigate this stuff, it's kind of disappointing, because it'd be so much more fun if that stuff existed.
Right.
As opposed to, like, yeah, someone made it up. It's like, well, shit.
Won't stop me from wedging it into the occasional terrible piece of fiction I try to write, but but I don't believe in it. So, I guess if you have any comments, questions, etc., you can leave a comment on the website, novelideaspodcast.com.
You can email us, although we don't check our email very often.
Yeah, actually, I've been thinking about retiring the email address, but currently that decision has not been made.
It's not a bad idea. So if you think the email should stick around...
That's right.
Feel very strongly about us. You can email us at novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at novelideaspod.
And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at ClassicSumUp.
Yeah, I spoke too soon, I guess. We are on Twitter, but not the Novel Ideas Pod is essential. I mean, if you leave a comment there or send a message or something that's relevant to the podcast, Gabs will definitely see it and hear about it. But essentially, I run that account because I'm the only person who ever tweets from it.
Yep, and I'm at ClassicSumUp, so.
And
You can also find us on iTunes.
Yeah, however that works.
However that works, but you can find us there.
iTunes people.
And we actually do have a logo now. We just need to figure out how to make it a thing.
I made it our Gravatar. I don't know if that populates to iTunes or not, because I don't have iTunes.
I'll go check.
All right. next time we do a podcast... we're aiming for, but certainly not committing to, the end of May.
Yeah, my semester ends at the beginning of May, and then I'll need a little bit of time to actually read a book and all that. So we're hoping end of May.
So, yeah, it'll be the two of us, as usual, with a special guest reading The Martian by Andy Weir.
Andy Weir. I accidentally put a D on it.
Andy Weir. I accidentally put a D on it. You put that there just made me look dumb.
So this book has been blowing up the bestseller list as far as sci-fi goes, and they're making a movie adaptation of it. So
all right. Well, why the hell not?
It's kind of a big deal. Yeah. So we thought we'd check out, we'd see what this buzz is about.
All right. Sounds like a plan. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.